Today it is my distinct honor to introduce a very well-known face at Rare. His compositions are among the most recognizable and outright classic pieces in Rare history, spanning Banjo-Kazooie, Donkey Kong 64, Perfect Dark, and Viva Piñata. Today, he continues his artistic genius to big, huge games, where his legendary compositions will no doubt take gamers by storm. Today I welcome the Grant Kirkhope.
Hello.
Hello, Grant.
How are you? What an intro. Are you lying?
No.
I don't know that guy.
Oh, no? Alright, so, question one. Okay, I know this is going to be a really, really difficult question, but do you have a favorite tune that you've composed while at Rare?
I do, actually. It's off the last Piñata game, and I think it's called... When they put the CD out, right, they changed all the titles. I just called it Night 1, Night 2, Day 4, that. So I forget the title of it, but it's on my website. It might be Bedtime Story.
Bedtime Story.
It starts with a bassoon going da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's how it starts. That's my favourite tune of all time that I wrote. In fact, that was the last tune that we did in that Piñata recording session. And it was like the last day recording, and the orchestra played it absolutely beautifully. And then the guy said to me, right, Grant, why don't you go out and thank them? I thought, oh my God, so I had to walk out to thank them all. I just like burst into tears. When I got to the podium, with the conductor guy, I just kind of went, oh, I think you're all wonderful, and, you know, kind of ran away crying. But yeah, that's probably the best favorite piece of all time, probably.
Oh, probably best flattery, too, I can imagine, being in that orchestra and seeing you come up there.
Well, it's just amazing. I mean, it's just that experience, just nothing like it. It's incredible.
And on the other side of the spectrum, is there a specific song that you just could not stand, whether it be like constantly having to redo it, or you just hit a writer's block wall?
Honestly, not really. I'm pretty proud of most of the stuff I've done at Rare. Maybe apart from the Donkey Kong rap.
Still notorious, is it?
I know, that everyone seems to hate. I mean, I had fun doing it, and I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was supposed to be any kind of serious attempt at rap music. It was supposed to be a joke, but no one took it that way, unfortunately. I don't think, really, nothing at Rare that I've done I don't like. I like all of it, seriously.
Do you have any favourite bands or musicians that you're into?
Well, I'm a bit of a metaller, really, so I do like quite a lot of heavy metal over the years. I was a big Judas Priest fan. I really like Queensryche. I think Queensryche write some very dark music. I like them better before Empire, because they write kind of really dark music. But, you know, I like a lot of stuff, really. I think I do definitely fall on the rock side of things as opposed to pop music. I mean, I think Lady Gaga's fantastic, but I don't think there's too many pop acts that I'd like. I guess it's because I'm an old fart now. I'm old. You know, I'd probably like things that were younger if I was younger. but I guess, you know, that I do like a lot of metal. I mean, I don't listen to that much these days, really. But I certainly would. I could still listen to Queensryche and like it, and Judas Priest and the Kid's Great. I had a big Maiden phase as well. A lot of the kind of British new wave of metal bands that came up in the 80s. I was a big Bon Jovi fan as well, you know. All that kind of stuff.
Ah, that's awesome. Also, we have to ask, as a professional inside the gaming industry, what was it like to see music as a whole evolve through, like, you said you were using Cubase to create all your music and stuff, to going, like, having entire orchestras at your fingertips?
Yeah, that's bizarre. I mean, when I first got to Rare, I was first put on Donkey Kong 2 on the Game Boy. I had to convert Dave Wise's tunes to work on the Game Boy. And that was all done in Hex. I don't know what Hex is. Hex is like just like numbers on a black screen. And I just like thought, my God, I just have to quit. I just can't do this. I spent a day showing me very quickly how to do it, and I just thought, it's just beyond me. I thought I'd have to quit and go home, literally. And then the second day, I got him back in to show me again. And in the end, I quite enjoyed that. But I suppose I was used to using sort of, you know, an actual synth that you would use Cubase to be a synth, to be a sequencer to use, you know, like that. But of course, you have to take the instruments that you use and make them very small to get them into the memory of the machine. So to get stuff into the N64, you have to make things very small. and have them compressed, and the quality would be low, you know, that kind of thing. So you have to make any, all the stuff you hear in N64 is samples that we use to make up our own little MIDI orchestra kind of thing. So, I mean, N64 was quite a step ahead at the time. I thought it was quite good. And then, of course, we started work on the GameCube, and that was still going to be the same way, even though that people that by that point were using sort of CD soundtracks and stuff.
Yeah.
But Nintendo didn't want to do that, so we were still going to end up using like a little MIDI orchestra, albeit better quality, but still the same stuff.
Yeah.
But of course, then Microsoft bought us, and we went straight to the Xbox, so we could use proper instruments. So, I was using the Vienna Symphonic Library, which is quite a big orchestral library, which is quite expensive to buy. Mm. I used that for Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. On your site, you stated that it was your last title at Rare, and
it
that
was.
You felt you'd kind of sort of come full circle. Was composing Nuts and Bolts something like familiar, like were you like, oh, and Mumbles Mountain, and you know, kind of comfortable, or did you feel like it was just a new total thing altogether?
No, I think it felt like an old shoe slip on. I mean, I think I was very conscious that I wanted to please all the kind of fans of the game to make sure that they had enough reference points to still link it to the past games. And so pretty early on I decided that it would be nice to try and include little clips of the earlier games in the music. And one of the first tunes that I wrote for it that did that was Nutty Acres, I think. Because at the end of that, I think there's a... Is it Nutty Acres? There's a little clip of Treasure Trove Curve at the end of that.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
That's right, that piece. So that was the first time it worked really well. I thought, oh, I might try doing this some more. So I just thought it was a great idea to kind of, you know, have a new tune and link in the old stuff too. So that was great. And originally the plan was that, because I was doing Pinata 2 at the same time, I knew I wouldn't get the time to do up the whole game. I really wanted to do all of Banjo and completely all the music and all the sound effects like I did in the past, but I wasn't going to get the time to do it. So I had to give the sound effects to Martin Penny, and I was hoping to compose all the main themes for all the areas, and then Robin would come along and he would take the main theme and write the challenge pieces and the race pieces for the various bits and the levels.
Yeah.
And that's how it sort of started off. And then he said, look, why don't we just divide the levels up and so I get a chance at it too. So we just kind of did that. He took the levels and I took the levels. So, but he used my tunes as well. So, like, you know, he used the stadium tune from Banjo-Tooie and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he did his own thing with it, which was great. It was good to get the help. And also Dave Clinic helped out with all the spoof pieces at the beginning of the levels that were, like, you know, past theme tunes from other games. So I did the Dallas sort of one, but he did the rest of those.
And Dave, I read somewhere, I think it was on your MySpace, you ended up saying that you did the main Showdown Town theme, but you had Dave do, like, the Docks theme, so you split it up?
Yeah, I think I did the main Showdown theme, and I did the string quartet version of it, and it was Robin that did the rest. Robin did the rest of that. I think he did the Docks version and the Park version. I did the Game Boy version, Logs, whatever it's called.
At the top,
I did that, and the very main theme, and the string quartet, I think. That's what I did for that one. So, it was really good to do it, and, you know, when we got to Banjo-Land, I thought, I've just got to try and fit in as many of the old Banjo pieces that I possibly can.
Oh, that was great, I've got to say.
Well, the plan was to try and have a channel fade going, so when you wanted to a new area, the tune would change to the new version of the tune.
Mm.
But because you can run around the level so quickly,
wouldn't
be enough time to check to a channel fade to a new piece. So, in the end, I kind of just took them all together and tried to get as many, you know, different ones as I could get. As I could at one time, so that was great to do.
Wow. Also, do you have a favourite memory while working at Rare?
I have lots of memories at Rare. I mean, it was, you know, Rare was a really, really special place for me. I mean, you know, absolutely broke my heart leaving that place, and I think the whole experience of being at Rare was just incredible. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, getting there just after they did Donkey Kong 2 on the SNES, so they'd done Donkey Kong 1, it was getting, you know, had a big success with that, and I was kind of thinking, I just couldn't believe I was actually there, you know. I couldn't believe I was actually writing music for a living. I mean, I'd been playing in bands from 22 to 33 really, in age, and I was on and off unemployment, and some were success, some were dreadful, and to actually get a job was just, you know, it was beyond my comprehension. I never thought I'd ever get a job, let alone writing music for a living. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
Robin, I knew Robin from years before, so it was great to work with him. I wouldn't think there was any one special memory for it. I think probably when Banjo-Kazooie first came out, I think we really felt we did something special there. And we'd all kind of watched Mario come out on the 64, you know, and thought the game was fantastic, and used that as our benchmark to try and make something comparable, you know. So,
yeah.
And that team was a really special bunch of people. Just, you know, I think right place, right time, and everyone had the same sense of humour. Everything, you know, the way I did the sound effects to how they wanted the humour to be, it just all gelled together greatly. So,
yeah. You know, well, it's the right people, eh, when you get them all together and laugh.
Oh, yeah, absolutely phenomenal. So I think my entire time at Rare, my entire 12 years, was just the best time ever, really.
That's awesome.
Hmm.
On to the Dream stuff. At the start of the summer, you released a large collection of Dream tunes to a grateful and ecstatic banjo community. On your site, you've said that you've ended up writing 107 tunes for Dream. Are you able to remember any of these tunes on your site, like, other than the ones you've posted?
Oh, yeah, loads. There's lots of tunes I can remember. Lots. I mean, it was just the ones that I had, I did write when I first, I was actually trying to impress Tim Stamper and Greg Mills at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was doing GoldenEye, and I got halfway through GoldenEye, maybe a bit more than that, and because Greg Mills got started off and I went to do Blast Corps, and I got given GoldenEye to do when he was away. And then he came back to it, and Tim just marched in one day and sat on the floor, and Greg sat in a chair and just said, "Can we hear your tunes, please?" I didn't really know who they were at the time. I was kind of, "Oh, these are like quite, you know, head guys at Rare," but I didn't know who they were. And so I played my GoldenEye tunes and said, "Oh yeah, that's quite good." So I said, "Dave, I'd like to come work in our game." And I knew Dream was going on, but Dave Wise was doing it at the time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So he started it off, and then so I'd written some kind of. The tunes that were on the website, ones that I'd done using like MIDI and proper synthesizers, not samples that I created myself.
Yeah.
So they're better quality. So that's why I had quite a lot of those tunes kicking around. So I was able to just put this on the website in a reasonable state. Where I have got the MIDI files for all the Dream stuff, but it would mean me, it's not impossible, but just mean I'd have to go back and recreate some instrument sets. And just, it would take a bit of work for me. And because I'm so busy at the moment, I haven't really got the time to do it. But I do have all those MIDI files, but the one that I really want to have is one called Black Eyes Song, which I've been talking about for quite a long time. And we thought it was a great idea to have a proper song in the game.
Oh, yeah, like a choir thing.
Yeah, well, it was actually a proper song. It was Black Eye was a fat, drunken pirate who was the guy that was the baddie in the game.
Yeah.
And I wrote this tune, and a guy called Lee Ray, who worked at Rare, sang it. He had a really good pirate accent. And Greg and a few of the guys were the pirate chorus in the background, and we recorded it. It was in the game, and it was really funny. I loved it, and I did record it, but I honestly cannot find the recording anywhere. And I think it's on a DAT tape at Rare. Robin said he looked for it for me, so I'm hoping that I do dig that out, because I just really thought that song was a really funny song to listen to. It was kind of based in that sort of Monkey Island sort of funny, you know. That's because we loved the Monkey Island games, and you know, I played those games, you know, over and over again, because I thought they were hilarious and loved the humour and loved the music and all that stuff. So we would try to do that kind of thing. So so the Dream tunes that I had, I just thought I'd put them on the website, but you know, but I thought it was quite nice for everyone to track back some of the tunes that I used in banjo later. So I thought that was, people will like appreciate and sort of hear it, and you know, and see how I just, you know, yeah. So now I can remember lots of tunes from Dream. It was at the time a big deal for Rare to try.
Because that would have been the next huge thing, other than banjo, until it evolved to that.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It started life on the SNES, so it wasn't on the N64 first of all.
But is there any like locations that you can remember that you composed for? Or?
There was a beach. The beach scene at the start. We had a really good trailer for the game, actually. Sort of intro movie that we'd knocked together for Nintendo. And Black Eye was kind of big fat pirate farting on the beach. There's a big treasure chest, and the sort of the logo popped out, and the music all kind of matched it. And it was just a really great intro. And we did have that on an actual cartridge, and I've got a funny feeling. Well, Tim Stamper did have that cartridge. Whether he still has it, I don't know. But that's the only version of the game that probably exists. He has that. There's a big chase sequence. There's kind of a big kind of minecart sequence, you know, like Donkey Kong, like Indiana Jones. Also, we were trying to use full speech in that game, so we did quite a lot of voice acting for that game. So it's quite, at the time, not a lot of games did that.
Yeah.
And the cartridge space was very limited. So the plan was to use that bulky drive that came out with the N64. The plan was to put the game on the bulky drive for extra space, so it'd have the, you know, the extra memory.
Yeah.
And that's what we were trying to do with it all. It was kind of the start of the banjo humour. It was funny. We had lots of, you know, silly, quirky things that went on in the game, lots of bizarre characters, and one of the best characters I remember was a guy called Rear Admiral Browneye, which was, I'm sure you'll find the connotations in that quite amusing. We found that he was quite, he always takes the fleet from behind. That was his, that was his kind of thing. So it was, it was a big deal at the time, and but we just couldn't get it to run on the N64 fast enough with this kind of really bizarre floor system, which you could make the floor into any, you can stretch the polygons into any kind of shape at all. So really, you can make really elaborate areas, but the N64 just couldn't handle it.
Oh, jeez.
And Conker was started at the time, and Conker had a really good system, and they were very much like Mario at the start. We were all jealous of that game. It started off so well. And then they kind of hit a bit of a design hitch, and then Banjo started, and we kind of overtook them to get the game out first. But Conker was a very different game to the game that ended up being in the end.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's like a rear reverse there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, Dream would have been a good game. It would have been good. It's got very fond memories of that time.
Also, what was your favorite game series to compose for when you were at Rare?
That's a tough one. I think I'd probably say Viva Pinata, just because I think if I was to compose by myself and not be employed to do it, that's the kind of music I'd probably choose to write. I really like that kind of gentle English pastoral feel. And I like writing big soppy tunes. I'm a real old softy at heart.
This is coming from a guy who loved metal, right?
I know, it's very bizarre. I've got that kind of complete T-sat. I like complete mad metal, or I just like this completely softy Elgar Vaughan Williams sort of sound. And I just really like that sound. And I think it's not very often that the two things will coincide in a game. I mean, I always say that you need to write what's right for the game, not what's right for you.
Yeah.
I do meet a lot of guys who want to write music in a certain style because they like that style, and I often think that it doesn't fit the game. I always try to make my stuff fit the game, So, but I mean, I think Banjo started off quite different because it did end up. Banjo was in Dream for a while, and he was because we changed the character from a little boy to a bear. I think it was actually. I think at first it was a rabbit at first, and then we changed it to Banjo to a bear, and Tim and so I'd written some music that was a bit that way. It was because it was more sort of RPG based, so it had bigger tunes and stuff. But then when it changed to Banjo, Tim said, look, it's got to be more comedic, more platformy, more throwaway. Yeah. So the first tune actually, I wrote for Banjo actually was the, I think it was the spring version of Click Clock Woods, but then it wasn't called that. I just wrote a tune on the top of my head, just thought this might fit a game like this. So, so that's before I kind of got into that quirkiness that I got later in Banjo. That was more like a traditional sort of jolly, happy-go-lucky piece of music, where I think I got that more quirkiness in Mumbo's Mountain and, Bubblegook Swamp, those kind of stuff. I got more in that kind of quirky mode later. Write that stuff at the time was great fun. I was just trying to write something that I thought was a bit different. Whether it was or not, I don't know, but I felt Banjo was a bit different to other things that were out there. It was a bit more quirky, a bit more oddball. And so that was really fun to try and find that style. But I really, really enjoyed writing Viva Pinata, those two games. I mean, especially Viva Pinata 2, which, I mean, the game sold very few copies. But the kind of the ice part of Viva Pinata 2 is probably my favourite tune.
Icicle chorus, you mean?
No, the ice part, the icicle level in there. In Pinata 2. I think that's probably my. Yeah, I think that's probably my favorite music, the icicle tunes, the ice tunes. Yeah.
Also, your new title that you're composing for, Project Mercury. We know it's like all hush hush and you can't see much about it, but how's your experience working on it so far?
It's been great. I mean, when I first went to work at Big Huge Games, I was hired as the audio director. I wasn't hired to compose. They already had a contract with a company in Germany called Dynamedian, or Dynamedian, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce it. And they've done quite a lot of games on. They're a good company, good bunch of guys. I met with their head guy called Pierre Langer when I was there, and they were still going to be composing the music for the game. And I thought, well, yeah, fair enough. I wasn't hired to do that, so I thought that's their bag. So, but I did say maybe I might contribute some themes. So they said, oh, yeah, that's great, we're fine. So I thought about doing that, but never actually got around to it. And then, of course, I think it was. Obviously, the company nearly got closed because THQ decided to sell us. And at that point, all contracts were off. Just prior to that, the guys at Big Huge sort of thought, it seems a bit daft having Grant sat here not composing when I could be composing as well as doing sound design. And I mean, on a purely mercenary basis, it would save them $100,000 or probably more.
Yeah.
I'm sat there getting paid. I can do it for nothing really. So he said, "Look, why don't you do it?" So I said, "Well, I'll have a go, and if you like it, if you don't like it, you can keep going. But I'll write some tunes to what you think." So I was trying to come up with the overall. My job was to direct the overall sound of the whole game. In fact, there was two games at Big Huge at the time, and I was kind of the guy hired to give the direction, to kind of point them in the right direction and how the audio and the music should go in the game. So that's my job. So I had to do that as well as my own work. So that was how I started off there.
Also, you've got two young kids at home that you said they were dancing to the end credits theme, the Viva Pinata TV show. Have you told them that you're like, you created that song? Or did...
My kids love it. They really like it. I mean, they love the Spiral Mountain theme tune start and the start of Nuts and Bolts on the banjo that I played at the time. They really like that tune. And Max loves it. And I mean, watching him play XPLAs, it's a really great experience. It really is amazing to watch my son play and genuinely like it, not because he thinks I did it, just because he likes it, full stop. You know, I don't think he cares that I did it or not, he just likes it. I mean, it's, I don't know, I find that really fantastic. It's just brilliant that I can say, yeah, I wrote that tune, son, you know, it's quite nice.
Back on the topic of Project Dream, a lot of fans have been listening intently to the tunes, trying to find if they've been reincarnated in other games or anything like that. From what you've seen, is there a tune that nobody's found yet, or... You know, it's a dream tune we haven't heard yet that you recall has definitely been used in the...
That's a tough one. I don't know about that. I'll have to think about it. People say, yes, 1:36, that just sounds like this piece of music, you know, and it's like, does it? I mean, it's quite bizarre, really. It's quite funny, that. It's quite odd. Some of the boss pieces that I did for Dream turned up later in Banjo and turned up in Donkey Kong 64 as well. People Squid in Dream that turned up as one of the boss levels in... definitely more stuff in Dream that I used to get. No doubt about that.
Has anybody surprised you with their findings on the Dream Tunes? You've gone, oh, I didn't think anyone would find that one.
Not really, not at the moment. I mean, people have spotted most of the stuff. Most of the stuff is pretty obvious, I think. But I can say that you do get people who do spot stuff that isn't really there. Well, I don't think it is. So you get guys saying, you know, 1:40, I can hear a piece of music from so-and-so, and I don't really spot it. No, it's really good fun when people do stuff like that. I'm very, you know, humble that people take the time to even bother listening to it, you know. So it's great.
I suppose it has that element of backmasking, doesn't it, when people think they're hearing messages and, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, subliminally, you see.
Yeah. Back in, it was a magazine called Retro Gamer, Chris Sutherland from Rare said that originally Glitter Gulch Mine and Witchy World were planned for Banjo-Kazooie, but then were transferred to the sequel. Did it get as far as you composing these level tunes for any beta tunes, for that matter?
I think I've done the mine, I think. I don't recall Witchy World being in Banjo 1, I don't remember that. I did start after Banjo 2, but I definitely had the mine tune, I think. But also... there was like a lava level in Banjo-Kazooie, which was, you know, that I started working on, but that got cut, and it sort of ended up as Hellfire Peaks in Banjo-Tooie, but it wasn't quite like that. It was different to that. It was more akin to the kind of Mario lava levels where they get the Indian tune, that level. It's a bit more like that.
Mount Fire Eyes, was that?
It was like, you know, Hellfire Peaks in the second game?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sort of ended up as. But I think it started off as... It started off like a traditional sort of lava level in the first game, but just didn't make it. It was kind of draw... A guy called Chris Peel drew it all out, but it didn't make the game in the end.
It's kind of disappointing, I guess, when something's cut like that.
Yeah, no, it got tight at the end. I mean, Banjo was... I mean, the story behind Banjo was supposed to be out when Diddy Kong Racing came out. That was Banjo's slot.
Mm.
And I remember we all went to the E3 that year, and Howard Lincoln, who was one of the head dudes at Nintendo, sat us all down in the conference room and said, you know, guys, he's a very, very softly spoken man, but he was feared for he could be a very nasty man, but, you know, he was very, very quietly spoken. I remember we all knew by that point there was no way we were going to make Christmas, there was just no way we were going to do it, we were miles behind.
Yeah.
And he said, just to let you know, guys, that we've allocated, you know, this many million dollars to the advertising budget, and at this point we're all locked in to Banjo-Kazooie coming out for Christmas. Well, he said, you know, is that okay? We're like, oh, yeah, Howard, yeah, no worries, yeah, it's possible. And we obviously thought, shit, there's just no chance. We just thought, what are we going to do? In fact, one of the guys was so upset he wouldn't come out at night to stay in his room, just got so upset to stay sat in his room all that. But luckily, at the time, they were doing a racing game. It was supposed to be, I think it was RC Pro-Am.
Yeah, Prime 64, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was going to be that. And the tenant said, look, if Banjo's going to make it, stick some Diddy Kong characters in that game. You know, stick Donkey Kong in there, get it out, and it'd be great. And that's so Diddy Kong Racing got all our budget, all our advertising, and they made an absolute fortune. So lots and lots of games, and all the other people on the team made a huge lot of money. We were really depressed, like, oh god, they've got all our money over, like, you know. And they were a bigger road to it than we were, so they got more money anyway.
I'm glad how professional that was. Here, just stick a few monkeys in there.
Well, I'm sure it was a bit more designed than that, but that was the gist of it.
Yeah.
And so Banjo came out the summer after that, because we just couldn't get David in time. So things got cut out of Banjo that we've been planning, that just got put in the second game.
Do you have a favourite dream tune when it comes to composition?
I do like the tune that ended up in Pinata. Yeah, that one, yeah. Because the whole part of that tune was, it's supposed to sound a bit like Peter and the Wolves. I don't know if you know that piece of music, but it's a kind of kid's story music. It's quite a famous piece of music.
Picking the what?
It's called Peter and the Wolf.
Peter, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, so that tune, when we first started Dream, Stamper said, I want it to be a big open garden, a big open world. So and we listened to Peter and the Wolf quite a lot. And so that tune was kind of based on that, and I thought that tune was really good. I wanted to save it till I thought I could use it in something really good, so I saved it all that time until Pinata. There's a few tunes that I did that to. I saved them, kept them back, thinking I must save that tune for a game that I think is really going to fit. There's a couple of tunes in Pinata like that. I saved that one of the tunes in Pinata I actually wrote for my wedding. I thought when we got married, when we signed the register, I'd write a piece of music that could play while we signed the register so the guests wouldn't get bored. I saved that piece right from Dream, got it in Pinata, and prior to that, it's in my wedding. So that's just in Pinata.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, Midnight Feast, that was another one that made it in Midnight, Viva Pinata.
Yeah, just these titles. Because Justin Cook at Rare, he's left Rare actually. He was Dean Pinata. He was head designer, and they asked him to, when it came to doing a CD, they asked him to make up names for series like pulling his hair out. Track, I think of tunes. So I get mixed up through which tunes, because I can't remember what they're called.
That one was the Voyage one, and it had like, I think it was a nighttime level, and it's like dun 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 dun, and you had that kind of tingly. Anything like that?
Yeah, right. All right, quite possibly. I'll have to, you know, have to hear it.
Music is one of the things in games that does remain timeless. Graphics get outdated, programming codes optimized. How do you feel that people do carry around your work on their iPods and stuff? You mentioned that earlier.
I really find that, honestly, and I've said it a million times, but I find that so humbling, and I really mean that. I think for any artist of any nature, be it, you know, pictures or cameras or you name it, whatever you do as an artist, I think for anybody to appreciate your work is absolutely incredible. You know, to have anybody, to have 10 people want to listen to my music is fantastic, never mind, you know, hundreds of people or whatever it is. You know, it's like, I just really, I can't stress that enough. I find that really humbling, and it never ceases to amaze me. I get mails from people all the time saying, you know, I like Perfect Dark or I like Banjo or whatever, and I just find it just absolutely amazing. I'm so lucky. I'm so grateful to be involved at Rare at that time. I'm just so lucky to have people like what I do. There's nothing better than that. It's incredible.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to add?
Well, just thank you for taking the time to want to talk to me. I mean, really, I mean, I honestly, you know, I just find it peculiar. People want to pay attention to me, really. you know, it's really nice. I mean, I don't know, I do love writing music, and I do love making the sound effects. I just love doing games audio to death. It's a great career, you know. I've been very lucky to be, especially since I spent a good 10 years of my life leaving university, just doing nothing, playing in bands, you know, doing nothing, and to actually end up with a career, you know, that people that like. And I just find it, I can pontificate endlessly about how wonderful it is to be like that. And I mean, and I do find myself sometimes, honestly, getting I get sick of the job, and I don't want to do it anymore, and I just think, oh, you know, I'm sick and I'm bored of doing this. So I just sit around for days doing nothing sometimes and get completely bored to tears. Mm. But then somebody will write me a nice email about something. I just go, I'm so lucky. How can I possibly ever think like this? You know, I've had so many nice mails from people who had sort of very nasty personal things in their lives that have... that my music has somehow helped them get over it. I mean, that is incredible to me that people, you know, I can't stress that. I just find that amazing. And I do moan about it all the time. And I'm sure if anybody that knows me well would say that I'm pretty miserable most of the time. and I do moan all the time about everything. Anybody at Big Huge Games will certainly tell you that. I'm sure anybody at Rare will certainly tell you that as well. Especially the programmers. I'm just moan until they did it for me and just get rid of me. I think I do have genuine moments of being really down about the whole thing and not liking it and going, oh, I'm sick of this, you know. I need to go and do something else. but if I listen to any of the Pinata music, I just kind of think that music is completely, you know, just send me somewhere else. I just find that, I don't know. I listen to those tunes. It's almost like I wrote that music for myself, which is like something that you really shouldn't do in games. Mm-hmm. But I think it fitted again, so I was lucky. But I think that music contains all the elements of music that I like, the chord sequences, the melody structure, the kind of the general orchestra layout, all the things. It's almost like writing music just to yourself that you like. It's like writing your most favourite thing. And it's usually when you write music for yourself, it's never as good that when somebody else sees it, they like it more than you do. You don't like it as much. And it's true, you never quite get it. When you write your own songs, you think, oh God, it's not that great, is it? But somebody else might think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, but I think with Pinata, I really like listening to it. I can listen to all that music and really like it a lot, especially the second game. Mm-hmm. And it's not very often that I think you can do that. Actually, funny enough, I've been playing Banjo-Kazooie on XBLA the last few nights because my son got 60 jiggies over the course and he'd been playing it. And he accidentally wiped his profile and he was absolutely heartbroken. He was in tears.
I know that feeling.
I know. So I promised him that I'd get all his jiggies back for him while he's in England. So I've been sat here playing with Banjo-Kazooie for the last few nights, cursing that it's too hard and I can't do it. You know, like I was doing Mr.
Vile. What are you doing?
I know. I was doing Mr. Vile last night. I just could not get doing Mr. Vile. It took me about an hour to beat Mr. Vile. And I was just like cursing, going, bloody game, I can't bloody beat it for my son, you know. So I've got like 40 jiggies back now, so I'm trying to get 60 before I go to England in a week's time. So, and I had quite enjoyed listening to the music game, which is quite bizarre, really. I mean, like Bubble Glue Swamp isn't a tune I probably listen to very much, but I listened to it last night. I quite like it. I think it's quite good. It's made me make me laugh, make me smile. Yeah. You know, so I guess, you know, I do have periods of listening to my own stuff now again, and like going back to The Perfect Dark, or, you know, and I do think, oh, I quite like that. You know, I'm quite pleased with it. I just really feel genuinely lucky to have people like anything that I've done, never mind all of it, just anything, any tune, any minute of tune, you know, really. I'm very fortunate. And it's nice you guys want to talk to me as well.
Totally. Thanks for totally coming on this show. Like, it's crazy that you can actually, you know, talk direct to devs and stuff like that. It's
really... No, I'm very flattered you want to talk to me, I really am.
So yeah, your next Mercury is going to appear at Comic-Con?
Yeah, the game's going to be... I've just been doing the trailer, actually, so I've had that recorded by Orchestra in Prague again. And it sounds huge, I think. I'm very pleased with it. It's come out. It's a very epic sort of trailer feed. It's got a bit of the main theme of the game in there. It's very short, but the trailer, I think it's on the 20th, is it? I'm not sure of the date. It's next week sometime. So Project Mercury should be unveiled then. I hope you like it.
Cool. So there you have it, guys. You can check out Grant next time at Comic-Con. Check out the trailer for Project Mercury. And here's some good old Grant Kirko. Thanks for joining us, Grant.
Thank you for talking to me. It's been great fun.
No problem.
All right.
Catch you later.
Okay, cheers. Bye.